Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. Hello, it is my pleasure. Welcome back, Fred Schenkelberg. Fred, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, James. How you doing?
Good. It seems it's been a while, or it appears to me it's been a while since we've gotten on here to record an episode.
Well, you've been off interviewing all these great and famous people across the world, so you've been busy.
I try and, as with you, bring in the leading experts in their respective fields to make sure that our listeners get the best information that's out there. So,
well, appreciate that. Yeah, and it's fun. I always enjoy talking to you.
You were gone. You're traveling for a bit too, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, we spent 3 weeks in New Zealand. If you ever get a chance, that is a destination that is well worth going to. Take your camera and enjoy.
Definitely, it is on the list of places to go, along with quite a few others, actually. Hopefully, we'll make it out there eventually.
Good.
You know, Fred, I was thinking about one of the questions I get asked on a regular basis, and it all comes down to a consultant. What is a consultant? What is a good consultant? How do you hire the right consultant? These are all things I hear often, and I want to get a second opinion on that because I have my own opinions on it, and our listeners have their opinions, but I wanted, from an experienced consultant, their point of view on these exact questions and topics. With that, what, in your opinion, is a consultant?
I break it out into three groups. There's three kinds of consultants. There's the contractor that is basically somebody that's not hired for full-time, yet they're treated just about exactly like a full-time employee. They have a desk, they have a computer, they have assignments or projects, and they take on activities to supplement your workforce. And so I think there's a type of consulting work that's really, to a large degree, instead of getting a W-2, you get a 1099. You get paid a little bit different ways. And usually there's a timeline associated. You'd be working with somebody for 6 months or 2 years or something like that. They're not that different, in my mind, from a new hire, somebody you bring on full-time. It's just a different contract that's associated with it. Another group is a consultant that really is just a pair of hands. So if you need, say, an FMEA, failure modes effects analysis, and you need somebody to facilitate that or to run a survey or to evaluate field data or do failure analysis for you, you may not have that expertise in-house, or you may not have the bandwidth. You may actually have the expertise, but just they're busy and you have another project. And so you'd hire somebody that's outside your organization. Larger organizations have internal consultants, essentially experts you bring in on a project basis. And they bring their expertise to help you facilitate the FMEA or look at the data or whatever the specific project or task is. So they're rolling up their sleeves. They're supplementing your workforce with their expertise. So it's a type of consultant. I tend to think of that as rolling up your sleeves. You're getting work done. You're creating a work product of some sort and or working with them to get something done. Another consultant is a trusted advisor. And a trusted advisor is more of somebody that's like a coach or a mentor or an educator. And so each of these categories obviously blur, they overlap in all kinds of ways. But if somebody is being hired in order to help your organization benefit from the knowledge of that consultant, that's a trusted advisor. My favorite kinds of projects are in that realm. One of my clients even asked me, he says, can you come into our organization and then disappear? I said, well, that's kind of rude. He says, no, what I want you to do is be an invisible hand. I want you to guide me and my team so that we gain the authority. If you come in and run the meetings and ask all the questions and do the presentations, my team doesn't gain the benefit of actually doing that. But he said, but my team doesn't know how to do, a Weibull analysis or design for reliability or these different tasks. If you were going to run this program, what would you do? And then help us do it. But you become invisible to the organization, so that he said, so that then my team gains the credibility. They're learning as they go, but they have you as the backstop. And so that's what I mean as a mentor or coach type role. And that kind of consulting can take on many, many different forms. It usually involves assessments or evaluations and audits and those kinds of things. And then you that consultant has the experience then to say, oh, here's where I see the problems, blah, blah, blah. You know, they usually state it more of, well, here's what you're doing well, here's what you could use improvements on, and here's what you should do next kind of things to what they bring, different than somebody that's, say, just out of school, just out of college or new to the field. Is a consultant in those cases doing an assessment brings years of experience and insights from many different situations, many different facilities. You really are buying not their 2 days in your plant, you're buying their 20 years of experience.
Yes, absolutely. And you did a good summary there of the three different kinds. You know, I always thought of just two. It was the consultant that comes in to help you accomplish, like you mentioned, advisor, strategic partner, and the internal one who floats around from site to site, project to project, that's part of that organization. I wasn't even thinking of the independent contractor. To me, that was just wrapped up in the trusted advisor piece. You bring a couple very good points there, because not all consultants I know come from a company. They might just be independents that float from project to project, from organization to organization. So,
and they're not interested in doing the strategic stuff or the assessment stuff. They are very good at a handful of tasks. You know, if you bring in a huge consultancy, right, those are going to be two or three strategic leaders to that project. They're going to guide the rest of the team, yet they'll bring in some college hires, some hired guns that are going to do keyboard entry stuff. You know, they're just going to do the task to get stuff done. You're still paying them a consulting fee. It's not near the rate of the leaders of the program, but essentially you could supplement with your own workforce. And if, so if you have a project that you need 1,000 components need to be inventoried and sorted and cleaned or whatever, and you can't hire full-time, you may be able to get a 3-month contract worker to come in and do it. So it kind of blurs the line between intern, a hire, you know, and a full-time employee and a consultant. But sometimes that's what you need. You need that extra pair of hands. And so some have really no expertise except for tasks that you really could do yourself if you had the bandwidth, so you're buying bandwidth. The middle group brings in experience to help you accomplish specific tasks, and they will create reports, they'll create analysis, and they'll lead meetings, things like that. The trusted advisors. So I think most people think of, when they think of a consultant, yet there are those three different groups, and people are successful in careers in all three different groups.
I agree with that. It's a good way of looking at things. You specified a couple different times where you would require consultants. One might be just that added bandwidth. Hey, we don't have the time to sit here and do the data cleanse on these materials, so we're going to hire someone in to come in and do it for us. That's a bandwidth thing. The strategic advisor, though, on the other hand, is looking at how do we leverage the material data, our storeroom processes, our min-max to get the most out of our spares dollars. Is there any other times when organizations would look to bring on consultants?
Well, there's all kinds of different consultants. In the reliability world, what I typically see are the bandwidth one, but it gets caveated with that is where it's a special task. It's like they may have been doing FMEAs, but not really successful. They know the basic process, yet they weren't good at it. They weren't getting good results on it. So it's a mix between doing a task and a trusted advisor, where you come in and facilitate the FMEAs for them, simultaneously showing them how to do it more effectively. So it's a little bit of training, a little bit of coaching, but also you're doing something. You're actually getting something done. So sometimes you just need that nudge of expertise to show you how to get something. You know you're having trouble with something and struggling with it. Instead of sending 5 of your employees out to conferences and training for the next 2 years, you bring in a consultant, and it just saves you time to get up to speed on a particular task or topic. So it's not quite bandwidth issue, it's an expertise issue. And then there's just training stuff. You get those, right? Where they say, hey, we know we have a knowledge gap. We need somebody to come in and train us. You could do that under consulting. And then the most difficult ones, and the ones that I enjoy the most, is where they say, we've plateaued. We haven't been making improvements in our program. What do we need to do next to get better? They can occur when they first build a plant, or when you bring in on new equipment, or after you've been running for 10 years and you say, we're stuck. We haven't been able to figure out what to do next. What do we need to do? And that's where the expertise can really be a huge lever for them to make improvements.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen and been both those, the trainer, the strategic advisor, and just the, we got to get this done.
You got a little bit of expertise in this. Help us get it done.
Yeah, pair of hands. That's what I call it.
Exactly. Now that we know what a consultant is, what makes a good consultant? What are the key qualities, expertise, soft skills that a good consultant brings to an organization?
That's a good question. Well, one is a disposition. Not everybody is made out to be a consultant. Consultants almost never have the answer when they walk in the door. You don't walk through the door and meet the guy that you're interested in working with or he's interested in hiring you. You say, oh, well, you need to turn left instead of right. That's all you need to do. Obviously, it'd be more complex than that in many cases, but I have met consultants and talked to people that have, this is the way you do it. If you're going to do a lean strategy, there's lots and lots of ways and lots of tools they'll come in with as their own binder full of trademark names of tools, and that's the only thing you need to do. To me, that's an element of not a good consultant, because they have an answer and they're going to sell that answer no matter what your problem is. So I tend to shy away from those folks. The other part, I should get back to the disposition part, is as a consultant, as an independent consultant, or even working within a company, you never really know what your next job's going to be. You rarely get to work with a program to see the product go through its entire life cycle. You may be involved with a maintenance team for 6 months, and you don't see the rest of the story, say 2-3 years later, unless you stay in touch with them. Some people really don't like that. They want to see things through and see the completion and see the full picture. Others like the camaraderie of an office and team members, and you're working towards a common goal, where consulting is oftentimes in and out. You might go work with a company for a couple of years intermittently, or you may work with them for 2 weeks and then never see them again. There's a real range of different engagements. And then the paychecks, it's not every month. You don't get a fixed amount from your employer. Most independent consultants, you know, they're working on purchase orders with their individual clients, and you finish the work or you set whatever your contract is and you send in invoices. And it's funny, I don't know if you see it with your work, James, but the bigger the organization, the longer the payout.
I don't understand it. It drives me nuts, but that's just the way it is. The bigger the organization, the longer the payment terms.
That's right.
I have one organization that's 90 days.
Oh, man, that hurts. You're really just giving them a free loan in some part of it. Some people are just that cut out for that. So if somebody is anxious about how they're getting paid and the uncertainty of what they're working on, they usually wash out of being an individual consultant pretty quick. But the good consultant is one that knows how to ask a sequence of questions to really understand what the problem is. The presenting problem, what somebody calls you and says, hey, James, we have this problem in our plant. We want you to come in and take a look at it. And you might ask, well, what's going on? And you say, well, we're running out of the wrong spares. Well, that's the presenting problem. Now, when you get on the ground and you start looking at what's going on and all those other things, the actual problem might be 3 or 4 steps away and either deeper or more insidious or cultural type things, or could be real simple. But generally, they're not interested in spares. They're interested in uptime. And so combination of understanding what is it that they really want, what is their objective? It's not to fix the spare room, the stocking room. It's to fix the uptime of their plant, for example. It could be something else. So part of it is don't walk in with an answer. And so a good consultant starts with a lot of questions and tries to get a good understanding of what it is they really want. And so that if you solve the presenting problem, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to be happy because that's not what they really wanted. A good consultant will start asking a lot of questions and to get an understanding of the scope, but also get a good understanding of what it is that they're really trying to accomplish by bringing you in.
Yeah, and that is key, is digging into problems, asking the right questions, understanding some of the underlying tones and activities going on at that customer site to make sure you're giving them the solution that will actually make a difference, not just what they're asking for. Because sometimes they might ask for certain things, but that's not actually going to solve the problem they want to solve.
That's right. It's funny, sometimes the consultant's role is completely different than the project altogether. My very first project was the team that hired me, this quality director, knew exactly what the problem was, but didn't tell me. And so I went and did an assessment and made all these recommendations. And it was basically their general manager was a jerk and just basically undermining a bunch of the different teams. So that it was very difficult for them to accomplish their goals. And they'd yell at them for not accomplishing their goals. But nobody in the organization had the political clout to tell them that, or the guts to tell them that. I'm not sure which it was. So I'm going through my report, and it's pretty clear that he's the problem. And he's got his veins are coming out in his face and his neck, and his knuckles are turning white as he's grabbing it. I thought he was going to fly across the table and punch me. At some point, then he says, all right, that's enough. You can go. And so I packed up and headed out, and the quality director met me out in the hallway, and he goes, that was great. That was wonderful. I'm like, you set me up. you made me the bad guy. He says, well, somebody had to tell him, but...
Hey, he was smart. He got the problem solved, but he didn't jeopardize himself in doing it.
That's right. And so sometimes you need to understand that and understand what kind of landmines you're walking into or minefield you're walking into. Other times it's they don't know how to, as a team, they don't know how to identify the problem that they have. They know something's not right. They want to know. And so it's a lot easier to deliver those kinds of message. But it takes on more of an educational role rather than a confrontational role. So good consultants, in my mind, are very flexible. There's not one answer for everything. You need to solve the real problem, not the presenting problem. And if this is a simple problem, if it's a problem that you can answer before you get paid, you know, before you set up a PO, I think it's always good form that you just, every time you talk to a potential client or a real client, you leave them with something that improves their life. So if they ask a question, answer it. If I can give you a reference to a book that solves your problem, you can calculate the sample size yourself. What do you need to pay me $1,000 for that? Here's the book, right?
Yeah. And those little things make a huge difference. It provides trust. It builds that relationship. It does all those things. And you become that trusted advisor. I was working with a client, or actually I was trying to get into this client's organization. So we were sitting down, we were having a conversation, and at the end of it, they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to bring you on instead of XYZ consultants. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, why is that? And guy's like, well, for the simple fact that having a conversation with you, I don't feel that I would have to pay every single time I sent you an email or asked you a simple question. I'm like, no, why would you? He goes, well, some of the others we're talking to, we get the feeling that if I even ask them what time of the day it is, that would be billable time.
It's on the clock, yeah. And that's an unfortunate part. The nature of our work doesn't always lend itself to being a fixed rate. It's a $50,000 project, and I'll spend as much time as you need to make it happen. There's so many unknowns and variables to lots of stuff we do. But as often as I can, I try to do it fixed rate so that it just takes the clock out of the picture.
I find that is the best way. It provides predictability. And you know what? Yeah, there's some risk that if you're not doing your job well as a consultant, that risk is on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And that's what organizations want. They want, I find clients want to share that risk with you. They're not adverse to it all, but they want to share some of it. So
that's right. And it's going back to the building trust part. I'm not in it for just this project, right? I want you to succeed, whatever your business is. So I think in looking for a consultant is they've got to become not interested in their business. They got to make you successful. I found that over time, that turns into repeat clients and good word of mouth and all kinds of good stuff like that. And good things come back to you as that works out. But as you walk into a plant, I'm always fascinated with that it's a new product, a new technology, a new industry, or whatever it is. And there's always interesting stuff going on. So I'm a kid in a candy shop at that point. This is just cool. I like learning what you do. Sure, I'll bring what I know about reliability and ask questions and help you accomplish your goals. But I need to know what your goals are. You know, if it's time to market or if it's profitability or is it throughput or whatever it is, then I try to make sure I'm aligned with those objectives and targets. So if I make recommendations that compromise their uptime ratings and that's their top priority, I'm not serving the customer. It might be good for me. I might get to spend more time with them, but I need to get it aligned with the right objectives. And that goes back to that asking questions and getting to know them enough that you actually can solve their problems in a meaningful way.
Yeah, absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Now, with all that in mind, the right time to hire a consultant, the type of consultant to hire, and then...
Well, early and often, obviously, James.
You know, picking those good consultants, what could clients and customers do better to select a consultant? the right consultant for them.
That conversation you had where they said, well, I'm not feeling like I'm getting nickel and dimed. If the client trusts you, if you build that rapport and that trust, they can see that you're going to add benefit every time you talk to them or work with them or answer questions or whatever, add value each time. I think it's looking for that. Yeah, you might cost a little bit more, right? You might have actually not been the low bid, yet it's worth it to get the right person and to get the right expertise. And all of those things factor into it. But I think by far the biggest thing is that it's like hiring somebody is the right fit. Do they bring the right expertise and can they work with me? What I think of, how do you look at it? There's way too many times that I get somebody and they're obviously just looking for, if their first statement is, oh, we've got this problem and it's blah, blah, blah. And they say, well, how much would that cost? And I'm like, well, if you want low costs, don't ask me. Here's some other people that you might want to go work with. And I don't send those references to friends because it's generally a waste of time. So low bidding, yeah, you're working on a dollar thing, but you're not going to get the best work out of the consultant. You're going to get the low bidder that it's a hit or miss whether that person's going to be any good at what they're doing or not or have the expertise you're looking for. So to find the right person, think through the question or the problem statement well at first and be willing to open that up to the consultant, make sure that they understand what the problem is. Have that discussion about what really is the problem and get under NDA and have those discussions first. It helps both parties to understand exactly what we're trying to do. And oftentimes that is very illuminating to the client as they then are forced to think through exactly what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish in the bigger picture. So it's not a waste of time in any regard.
And that brings a huge or a big point to me. And it's, you know, having those open discussions, having those candid conversations with the consultant or potential consultant, that's the very first step to making sure that the client gets the most from that consulting engagement.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about a consulting engagement, it is a partnership between that organization and that consulting organization or consultant. And having those open conversations is one part. But what else do you think is required from the customer side to make sure that we get good success with a consulting engagement?
Well, part of it is that you have to have a champion inside that knows how to get the resources, has the authority to implement changes that you're asking the consultant for, and so on. So if you come in as a consultant and says, oh, you need to add another 1,000 square feet to your storeroom, if that's outside of the decision makers that you're making the recommendations to, it really limits what you can provide as a consultant. So it's if I'm working with the director of engineering, for example, and looking at design practices for bringing in equipment, they generally have the authority of how much resources they put into design effort. You know, all of those different criteria are in their team. On the other hand, if I was working with just the engineering manager or the electrical engineering manager for just the electrical engineering aspects of that team, they don't quite have the authority to implement the work. So coming in as a consultant, you need to think through, one, that problem or what you're trying to solve, and then connect that consultant with the right person that has the appropriate authority to implement the recommendations and make things happen. It's really, really frustrating when you get, I've had a couple of clients where I get brought in by some senior folks and then they forget about you. And they give you a junior engineer to let you in the door and to introduce you to the right people in the organization. And then you make recommendations and they go, well, I can't do any of that. You know, I don't have that authority. And the senior guys are like, no, 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 it's his project. What's going on here? So I think the organizations need to understand that if they want to change the culture of their organization, that's not going to happen by talking to first line supervisors. They're going to have to be a part of that. Yet if they're getting conflicting directions from senior management, then we got to change senior management's operation, the way they operate. And so if the consultant is not set up for success by being connected to the right people, to the right folks with the right appropriate authority to implement it, you're really hobbled as a consultant of what can get done.
Absolutely. And that's a good word of wisdom for working with consultants is make sure they're connected with the right resources, that the people that they're working with can make decisions and hold others accountable. That's vital because you can set up a consultant with a junior level guy, like you said, all day long. If they have no decision-making ability or an ability to hold anyone accountable, they can influence, but they can't really drive large sustainable changes.
And if you're just looking for somebody to do a bunch of keep data entry for you, then you can hook them up with a junior level person and they can answer your questions and help you get things done. But if you're looking at a strategic change or a cultural change or implementing a new program, those tend to take much more than just a place to put your laptop.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Fred, it's been a great conversation on consultants, using consultants, what to look for in consultants, and how to get the most of them.
Get the most of them. I didn't answer it. That part is pay them a lot of money. That might be a little self-serving. Now, I'm not sure. It's in context, though, to what value they bring to your group. So if you're implementing something and you need a consultant to make it happen, and it's a $1 million benefit to your organization, well, you don't need to pay the consultant $1 million, yet paying them $500 for it is probably not wise.
Exactly. It's balancing the cost, risks, and performance that we do with asset management. It's doing the same thing.
That's
when
right.
We hire a consultant. So quick question though, why did you become a consultant?
Well, I did a Speaking of Reliability episode, and I'm trying to think if I actually turned the questions on myself. I probably didn't because I'm having the struggle with it.
You know what? I actually listened to it today and you didn't.
Ah, okay. So here we're going to get it on the record. When I first started working in reliability engineering, I didn't even know it was. I was designing tests and doing some statistics and looking at life studies and field data. I ended up teaching many other people in the organization about what I was doing, about the techniques and skills and the statistics in general. And I liked that. I liked helping my peers get better at what they did. And so I just was the go-to guy for reliability stuff. And I had my own projects I obviously was working on. But I also had this extra layer of consulting with these other programs and projects. And I learned a lot just ad hoc doing it. When I got to Hewlett Packard, I got hired into a group, or eventually moved to a group that was really just internal consultants. We were about 50 people that, the way they phrased it a couple of times, I had clients phrase it this way, is you're too expensive to hire full-time in our organizations. We just need your expertise on occasion. So we're going to put you all up in headquarters and let somebody else manage you. And when we need something, we'll get the right team from that group to solve this problem for us. And so I was in that group and we were coached and trained and taught how to be consultants because that was our role within the corporation. And so I had a lot of soft skill training, a lot of presentation training, a lot of assessment type training, and lots of practice doing that with a team all around me of really, really brilliant people and good at doing what they're doing and consulting. So that was the ultimate training ground, I thought, to become a consultant. And in that group, I had a bit of seed money, a little R&D project within the group to see if this reliability engineering consulting service would be useful to add to the portfolio in the group. Prior to that, we worked on electronics assembly questions and electronics components type questions, which overlapped with reliability, but it was constrained to just the components and electronic assemblies. And I was proposing that we'd looked at it as product reliability and design for reliability and process reliability and working with our suppliers also. Within a few years, it was obvious that it was a success. And the director of this group, she came by my desk one day and said, you know, are you running this group or am I? Because 2/3 of the people in this group are working on projects that you were brought in, that you did. You know, we spent all this time trying to figure out what to do, consulting to do and selling our services. And you single-handedly have taken that over. I'm like, okay. She threatened me to become a manager. And I said, no. So we went and hired a manager. Yet I saw in that group and in that development of that program, the roles of trusted advisor, pair of hands and trainer and things like that. And the difference it made in these different organizations is oftentimes just asking the right questions and showing them a different way to look at something. In that time, I was also very active in professional development or in professional societies and conferences and stuff like that. And a good friend of mine that in our world of reliability, he had called me in for out to lunch one day and he says, why don't you do what you're doing now, but do it for the whole world? I hadn't really thought about it. I struggled with that decision for months. And so one weekend I said, I have to make this decision one way or the other. So I said, I'm going to leave. I got into my office. My first voicemail was my first client. They said, give me a call. We saw you do a presentation a couple of years ago. Are you available to do consulting? And so I called them back and we talked a little bit about it. And I said, well, give me 2 weeks and I could start the project. And they said, well, that's great, because it'll probably take us that long to do the paperwork anyway. And so I walked around the corner and gave my boss the 2 weeks' notice. And the weekend after that, I walked into my first client and got started. And so I worked with Ops a la Carte and Mike Silverman. He was a dynamo finding projects and finding leads and getting contracts. So I had a real steady supply of projects to deliver on. And so we had a great time doing that for a good number of years. And then he passed away, I think now almost 2 years ago. But I was getting burned out on the traveling and stuff. So I'm changing my consulting to more coaching and more training, more of this online presence stuff. So getting into it was, I saw how much of a difference it made to the clients. And it was fun. And it was different. Every project was different. I found that I really probably wouldn't be good as a factory worker putting wing nuts on bolts. I have a hard time loading 10 podcasts up to my website and getting all 10 of them done. If it's repetitive like that, not new, different, new challenges, all those things, I think all combined with the consulting training and coaching I got made it just a really intriguing career path for me.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a great piece there. You mentioned that, you know, you don't like those repetitive activities, tasks, those sorts of things. But what I know you spend a tremendous amount of time doing is learning how to improve those tasks, how to make them better, how to constantly improve it. So you're constantly educating yourself on what is best practice. How do we get there? What do we need to change? Let's make this small change and see the improvement. And I think that's vital for any consultant, is having the willingness to learn, to know that you don't know everything, be open to new ideas, continually push yourself to learn more and deliver results from that learning. And I think that's one of the best attributes of a good consultant, is the willingness to learn and be open to new things.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of saying you don't have the answer. You need to go figure out the answer. And if you're faster at and more efficient at doing that, you're going to be a successful client or a successful consultant. Yeah, that's a really good way of saying it, James, is that curiosity and the willingness to learn. In every situation that I've been in, I've had the opportunity to learn. And sometimes it's the client and I look at each other and like, well, I don't know. And it's like, but here's how we go find out. And they, all right, I'll pay you to go do that. You go figure it out. And I'm getting paid to learn, which is even better. That's great.
Absolutely. Well, Fred, it's been a great conversation. Definitely got some more insights into why you've chosen this field, some of your background in it. So it's always good to uncover these things. But before we duck out, where can people find out more about you? Do you have any upcoming conferences, activities, webinars, anything coming up soon?
Well, there's a couple of things. Carl Carlson, one of the co-hosts on Speaking of Reliability, and an author, and he's been in the industry, and he's actually a pretty accomplished consultant on top of everything else, is going to do a couple of webinars in late April and early May. And Carl and I have also been working on a book on reliability engineering management. It's aimed more at product development. But as you know, many of the same concepts apply when you're putting together a plant or meat. We're not going to talk about spares and kitting out material for a job, yet we're going to talk about the data analysis parts and how do you do an assessment of your program? Where do you find the weaknesses and make improvements? So we're looking at writing a book that's on how do you set goals, do the analysis, figure out what you need to do that will help you accomplish those goals. Create a reliability program plan. So the two webinars that he's doing are going to be kind of windows into our thinking in that realm. And the benefit to the webinars is that we're offering a chance to become reviewers as we finish off these chapters. The first chapter is ready. We're going to have for those that attend the live event or even see the recording of it, we'll get an opportunity to become a reviewer of these and receive the chapters as they come alive or come available in trade for comments and feedback and insights to help us figure out how to get the best possible product out there for our book.
So is there a specific page they go to on your website or a link, or where do they find that?
Well, right now, it's as we're recording this, it's like less than a week before this first one comes out. So they're underneath live events on AscendoReliability.com under the tab of live events. Once they're recorded, they'll move over to reliability.fm and then underneath the Ascendo Reliability webinar series. And if you're a member of the site, you'll be able to see the recorded video and audio of it and have access to the links that we'll get you the chapters and become a reviewer for the project.
Excellent. I'll definitely, this podcast will probably go live after that first one, but I'll definitely put links to both the live events as well as reliability.fm, Ascendo Reliability Series, so our listeners can definitely listen to that.
Oh, that'd be great. I know that we're struggling with a couple parts of where do we draw the scope of the book. If we get a lot of feedback saying, hey, we need some more asset management or more feedback in that area, we can certainly address it. We're setting up scenarios that would certainly include potential to write about that stuff and bring our thoughts into that. So that'd be cool to get as much broad feedback as we can. I think we'll just help everybody along the way and plus hopefully make a really nice product when we're done.
Well, Fred, it's been a pleasure. Have a great night.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.